I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You're listening to Blue Jays Nation Radio
with Cam Lewis and Tyler Yaremchuk,
a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts.
Episode 150 of Blue Jays Nation Radio with Yaremchuk and Coombsy. And Coombsy, it's almost like the Blue Jays knew that this was going to be a milestone episode for our podcast. 150 is a nice even number.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, June's been really good to the Blue Jays, man. Meltdown May is over and we're into a whole new month with good vibes only. Will the Blue Jays ever lose again? That's the question. Like 1 week ago, we were asking, are these guys ever going to win again? Yep. And now they look unbeatable.
Three consecutive series wins for the Toronto Blue Jays. They are 7-3 in their last 10, thanks to a sweep out in New York over the New York Mets. 3-0, 2-1, and 6-4. They kind of got all three of those wins in very different ways. So let's get into three up, three down for today's episode. Obviously, starting with the ups. And before game one, John Schneider comes out to do his pregame avail and says, hey, by the way, everybody, Chris Bassett is not going to be available postgame. His wife's in labor, so he's going to be hopping on a jet right after his start. And Chris Bassett pitched like a guy who knew he had to get the hell out of town relatively quickly. He was cruising through that Mets lineup, pitches into the eighth inning, no earned runs, strikes out eight and doesn't walk a single batter. That is a hell of a start from the Bassett Hound.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. When I saw the news that he was going to have to bounce immediately after the game and go be with his wife who's in labor, I kind of thought, okay, this is going to be a shitty start for the guy. Like who can handle the pressure of not only are you dealing with all that in the front of your mind, but you're also going into New York and going up against your former team as well. Pitching against Justin Verlander, a guy who's, you know, one of the best active pitchers, an obvious future Hall of Famer. Also the guy that the New York Mets were comfortable throwing a lot of money at over the winter, money that they didn't want to spend on you. So like you have all that going on in your head and you just come out and absolutely deal and throw a dominant start. It was, yeah, I'm not going to lie. When I saw all that, I thought, this probably won't be the best start for Bassett. He might leave after five, but then he goes 7 2/3 inning and is one of the most dominant starts he's put together. I know he had the complete game shutout earlier in the year, but it almost feels like this whole thing, given the context and the situation, is even a more impressive start.
Yeah. He faced 27 batters and only had to throw 101 pitches. So he was moving pretty quickly through that Mets lineup. And while we're on the topic of game one, Chris Bassett is the big up and they were insurance runs, not game winning runs. But Dalton Varsho is starting to find his groove a little bit as well. He hits a 2-run bomb in the series opener against the Mets. The power starting to maybe come through a bit here for Dalton Varsho. He's like, it's not happening all at once in some big heater, but we're starting to see little sprinkles of like, okay, this is what the Blue Jays front office saw in the guy.
Yeah, it's kind of a slow build here. We haven't had that streak with Dalton Varsho. And I mean, a lot of guys this year have had some huge hot streaks, like, you know, Vladdy and Matt Chapman to kick off the year. There was Whit Merrifield that had his crazy hitting streak. So like we've witnessed some pretty intense hot streaks so far this year, but Varsho's not really one of the guys who's had that. It seems like he's kind of slowly coming around and finding his groove. The positive thing with him, of course, is that the defense was always there. The speed, the base running, being a catalyst like that was always there, which is ultimately what they wanted. But now we're starting to see this guy's also got a big bat too, a big bat that, you know, he can just make contact with the ball and drill it for a home run. He's got that kind of power. And, you know, the Jays really, we've said this many, many, many times, but the Jays don't have the same depth in their lineup this year as they have in the past. So getting a guy like that going, getting him heated up, just, it doesn't even have to be like lighting the world on fire, but just being a solid middle of the order bat that can hit for power and drive in some runs is such a game changer for the Jays.
Yeah. Varsho, two-run bomb. Springer started the game with a home run as well. And then Chris Bassett pitches into the eighth, heads on home, and is there in time to see his wife give birth to Colson Bassett, is the name they went with. So Chris Bassett, a pop-up for the second time. That's your first up for the series against the Mets. In game two, it was Jose Berríos, the guy who we've come to expect have good starts for the Toronto Blue Jays. I mean, the run this dude's been on, Cam, since basically his third start of the season is really impressive, and his ERA is creeping closer and closer to getting below 3.5 on the year, which is very good. And hey, if again, you just look at kind of his more recent work here, a 2.95 ERA in his last seven starts. That is something.
We're starting to get, we're back at the point now, I think, where when Jose Berríos is starting, you expect, okay, he's going to go six or seven innings, scatter two or three runs, maybe a better start with, you know, only one earned run. He might, you know, dominate here and there, have a great start. But I mean, he looks again like the pitcher they acquired back in 2021. It really looks like last year was the anomaly. And that's really not how we felt like at the start of the season. Think back to, you know, they kick off the season and then he has that terrible start in Kansas City against a light hitting Royals team, and then goes into LA in his second start, another bad one. But since those two terrible starts, he's pitched 10 times and his ERA is 2.48 in those 10 starts. All told in the season, it's 3.66, which is, it's solid. Like that's pretty much the pitcher he was in Minnesota when they traded for him. Like if you look back at this exact time last year, early June, he pitched a great start against his former team, the Minnesota Twins. It was, I think it was six or seven innings of like one earned run, and that brought his ERA down to 5.24. So that's where Berríos was at this time last year. It was bad. Whereas now, you know, got those two ugly starts out of the way and it's been smooth sailing. It's huge for the Jays too, because, you know, Alek Manoah has not had the season that anybody expected him to have. Yusei Kikuchi's been ho-hum, number five starter standard. But with Manoah struggling like how he has, they so badly needed Jose Berríos to become that workhorse again, and he's done it. So I don't see any reason to believe that last year was anything other than an anomaly.
In his last three starts, he has pitched about 18 and two thirds. He has not allowed more than five hits in any of those starts. He has not allowed more than one earned run in any of those starts. And he struck out a total of 16 batters in those three starts. He's just absolutely cruising, man. It's awesome. And you're right. Like I thought there was a good chance we see him bounce back a bit, but now that we're getting to the point where it's been 7, 8, 9 consecutive starts of like, nope, consistent, solid. I didn't think we were going to get back to this level is kind of what I'm trying to say, but it's fantastic to see it regardless. He was dialed in game two of this series. And he was not the pitcher that got the win though, Cam. That belongs to Nate Pearson, who threw another inning out of the bullpen, struck out another two batters, didn't allow a base runner once again. We're going to talk about this every podcast. I will not shut up about Nate Pearson all year.
No, and I don't even blame, because in the third game, of course, he allows two runs to come in to score. But given the amount he's pitched recently, I don't think anybody has any qualms with, you know, eventually he's going to allow a run. It is what it is. But I think you said on the last podcast, you were like, let's give John Schneider some credit, because whenever things go wrong, we're very happy to point out that he fucked up. Mm-hmm. So now when things go well, like in the second game, you get Berríos, quality start, six innings, one earned run, and then you have to clear through three more without having Jordan Romano available. And Schneider did what I think was pretty much perfect bullpen management in this game. You got a clean inning out of Trevor Richards, strikes out two guys, Nate Pearson, scoreless frame in the eighth inning, strikes out two guys. Then Eric Swanson comes in to pick up his first save as a Blue Jay. I thought it was really good bullpen management. I think it's nice to go with the hot hands here, because I mean, if you had just I think the you know, if you went based on maybe like veteran experience or something like that, maybe Jimmy Garcia pitches the eighth inning, or maybe he comes in for the save and something goes wrong. But I think it's good to see the managers willing to instead go with younger guys who aren't necessarily always in those roles, like Pearson and Richards. I don't think we came into the season thinking, okay, Trevor Richards and Nate Pearson are seventh and eighth inning guys in the game where Jordan Romano's down. And here we are. Like, you trust your relievers who are pitching well. And I think that's positive. That's a good thing.
Yeah, like, okay, he gave up the two bombs in that last game, but if it was his second appearance of the year and he gave up two bombs, I would have been like, whoa, let's pump the brakes. That was his 14th appearance of the year, and it was the first time he's given up more than one earned run in an appearance. First time he's given up more than a run, period, as well. So that means he's coming in with runners on and getting the Jays out of things. Like, I just one bad appearance, not even bad, got hit hard a couple of times. I'm not exactly worried about that from Nate Pearson. Still excited about that. That's the second up is Jose Berríos with a little hat tip to Nate Pearson as well. You touched on the third game a little bit. It was solid. Brandon Belt came through with a big hit. He's been awesome since the month of April, but the up I'm going with here is Vladdy. Had a clutch double to help them win the game in game two, and then came through with his first home run off a non-position player. So an actual pitcher, someone whose main job is to throw balls and strikes. Vladdy hits his first bomb off one of them since the May series back in Boston. He's starting to come around now.
Yeah, it was a full month that Vladdy went without hitting a bomb off of a real pitcher. Like, he had that grand slam down in Tampa when they won that game, 20-2 or something. And it was a position player pitching, the guy who struck him out first, and he drills the grand slam next time up. I mean, the thing with Vladdy is he'd been hitting the ball hard, and it sucks to have this conversation because it feels like we're circling all the way back to 2019, 2020. You know, he's drilling the ball, but if he can get his launch angle, if he can get that right, if he can aim the ball up a little bit higher, then he'll hit more home runs. He won't hit the ball right at the fielder, blah, blah, blah. And that's always the frustrating thing, is you can see that he's getting on the ball and he's drilling it, but it's just not working out for him. It was a nice thing to see for him in that second game where he hits the RBI double in the top of the ninth inning. It feels like that was like a breakthrough point. You could almost feel like you could see when the camera panned to him on the broadcast, like the clear sense of relief that he had there after, you know, it had been a few weeks where pretty much every time Vladdy came up to the plate with runners on or in a key position later in the game, you almost just sort of shrug your shoulders and think, this guy never comes through and has like a clutch hit. And then, you know, pretty much two and back-to-back games against the Mets, there's the double and then there's the bomb. Like the bomb that he hit in the third game too was, you know, a pitch that was up in high, like one of those ones that's the typical pitch that he would roll over and smack right at the shortstop. That's the standard Vladdy ground into a double play pitch, but he got up, got under it and just launched it into the outfield. And that was a 2021 Vladdy home run. Those were the home runs that he was hitting when he had his almost MVP season. He was hitting those difficult pitches and launching them back in April, even when he was killing it. It was, you know, he's laying off on everything, waiting for his pitches. If it's a little bit up in the zone, then he can launch it out into space. And, you know, the reality with Vladdy is that he had that nagging knee injury going on. It's been going on for a few weeks. And we talked about maybe it would be ideal to give him a few days off so that he can heal himself. But now it does look like he's coming around, which, I mean, the Blue Jays badly need that, because a cold Vladdy in the middle of the lineup makes the Jays like an average offense. But an on-fire Vladdy takes them from average mediocre to very good. It's a night and day difference.
And don't dismiss the role Brandon Belt plays in this team's offense. It is wild. Let me give you some stats here, Coombsy. Month of April for Brandon Belt, 55 at-bats, only 4 extra base hits, 3 doubles, and a home run, only 5 RBIs. His batting average was 164. In May, Brandon Belt, granted, got to play a little more, 66 ABs, 7 extra base hits. Wait, no, sorry. Yeah, 7 extra base hits, 7 RBIs, and the dude had a .333 batting average. We were joking in April that it's just a lock that this guy's getting DFA'd at some point. Like, experiment didn't work. I think where we were maybe wrong a little bit in that is probably not understanding the injury he was coming off of and how little baseball he's played in the last 18 months of his life. We probably should have been a little bit more patient with a guy like Brandon Belt.
Yeah, we definitely, all of us, like, damn near every Jays fan was like, this guy looks bad. He looks injured. I remember there was one point where I said on the podcast, I thought, did his agent sell the Jays like a bag of raw goods? Like, what did his agent say? Like, did he say he was a lot healthier than he actually was? But, you know, we sit here and watch from TV and we carry on as though it's so much easier to play this sport than it actually is. And I mean, going through the injury that he had and the surgery and the offseason and the prep, and he's not a young guy. He's not 26. You know, he's a guy in his 30s. And I mean, as someone who just turned 30 himself, like I'm very cognizant of the, you know, the challenges of what that does to you physically. So, I mean, imagine doing that and being a Major League Baseball player, and it's not as easy to hit the ground running. You're moving from the National League to the American League. It's a completely different animal. You're seeing a whole bunch of different pitches you've probably never seen before. And, you know, Brandon Belt's a pro hitter, and there's a reason that there was quite a bit of optimism when they signed him. You know, there was talk that, like, you look back at his 2020 season during the COVID year, he was hitting for crazy power. He was so good. You know, I don't think it's necessarily reasonable to think he was going to go back to those, like, damn near MVP caliber numbers. But all the Jays really needed here was, like, a left-handed batter who could take pitches, you know, work a walk, be in the middle of the lineup, not be so swing happy, because we all know, like, the Jays have been like this for years. This, you know, this version of the Jays, even the Jays before them too, the 2015 and 16 teams, it was always a very swing happy right-handed lineup. So to have, like, a veteran left-handed bat in the middle there who's not afraid to see some pitches, and I mean, look on that Sunday game, like it can come back to bite you, unfortunately. Like, yeah, the terrible home plate umpire calls where he gets rung up like four times. Two of them are very clearly on pitches outside of the zone. You see how pissed off he is. Like, you can see the guy has a very good grasp of the strike zone, and then he comes through and hits the bomb. Like, this is badly what the Jays needed, a good veteran bat in the middle of the lineup. And Brandon Belt's come around. He's got damn near like a 500 on base percentage in the past month. Like, it's a good thing that Jays fans aren't running the team, because we all would have DFA'd him 2 weeks into April. And it's a nice lesson for us never to lean too far into small sample sizes.
Yep, 100%. There you go. There's your three ups for the series win against the Mets. Bassett, another strong start. Barrios, another strong start. Some bats are starting to heat up. But let's get to the down from this series. And I guess we'll slot Yusei Kikuchi into one of these, just because he was, I guess, the worst of the three starting pitchers. But I just want to have a bit of a conversation about him, because I think he's had an interesting year. In his last seven starts, a 5.5 ERA, he's slowly starting to slip back to maybe the Yusei Kikuchi of last year after starting the year overall pretty well. But also, when you have Barrios bouncing back and you have Bassett and Gausman pitching as well as they are, the Manoah stuff, I really don't want to have that conversation for on another podcast. But Kikuchi is pitching like a good number five, or an okay, like passable number five, is he not? He gets lit up every once in a while, and for the most part, he'll get you five innings, he'll give up a couple of runs, and you know you'll need your bullpen on that day.
Yeah, last year it was, you know, you say Kikuchi would start and you'd be concerned if he could make it through the order once.
Yeah.
You'd be like, you know, is Yusei Kikuchi going to come in and walk four guys and allow a home run in the first inning and the game's over immediately? And I don't really feel it's been the same this year. There's been some, you know, there's been some bad starts. Like, I'm looking here at his last five against Atlanta, four innings, against Baltimore, 4 2/3, against Tampa, five, Milwaukee, five, the Mets, five. The peripherals in the start against the Mets are better than it has been recently. Five innings, four hits, two earned runs, only one walk with eight strikeouts. But then the trouble is he allows the two bombs. And I think that's kind of been the issue this year, is he's really limited the walks, which is positive. But, you know, two home runs against the Mets, a home run against Milwaukee, very light hitting lineup there, two against Tampa, one against Baltimore, three against Atlanta. You know, I don't know. I don't think the expectation should be terribly high. I know we came into the year with that Yusei Kikuchi revenge tour. He's been so good in spring training. He's going to win the Cy Young, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, even look at the numbers that he put up in the 3 years with Seattle. It was over those 3 years, he had a 4.97 ERA. Like, to this point this year, it's 4.40. So if it's anything in the like mid fours, it's pretty reasonable. It's just last year he was unable to get through a lineup more than like once. He was walking everybody. He would be at 60 pitches in the second inning. It's, I don't think anyone should think this guy's a top of the, you know, top of the rotation arm. If he can just be that number five who can at least clear you through five innings and give you a chance to win the game, then you're fine.
second down would be they really had to burn their bullpen in the third day on the travel day of this series, which a bird in hand is worth two in the bush, as the old saying goes, right? You're not going to sit there and be like, you've heard that one before. That's like,
no, what does that mean? A bird in hand is better than one in the bush.
Yeah. I think it's like a hunting thing where, like, you know, you got one right in front of you. You can shoot the one bird, but there's always like the, but there could be like two in the bush you're scaring off. But no, you take the one bird, like you take the one you can get.
So you're like, what you're saying is it's good they burn the bullpen on Sunday to guarantee that win against the Mets. And even if they have to punt their next game against Houston, then that's just the way she goes.
You could still win that game against Houston. You could have had a rested bullpen, blown the game against the Mets, and still lost the game to Houston, right? Like, going out, yes, you had to burn Pearson, Swanson, and Romano, but you got the series sweep against the Mets. That win is still worth just as much as a win on Monday against the Houston Astros. Basically, what I'm saying is, yeah, is it a down that they're going to have a fatigued bullpen heading into the start of a big four-game series against the Houston Astros, who they're chasing? Sure. But again, you got the sweep against the Mets, so can you really complain? But it is worth noting, and like it heading into this start, it's a Manoah start in the opener against Houston, and you might not have your three best bullpen arms for it.
Yeah, we might need to see bullpen ace Trevor Richards toss three or four innings here on Monday. It seems that that's going to be the thing. Maybe we'll see a roster transaction before the game where they can get somebody up from Buffalo who has a little bit more length. I really want to avoid diving into the Alec Manoah conversation, but it always seems to bring itself up. Like, it's omnipresent. It's impossible to avoid this. So here we are.
Yeah, here we are. There you go. There's your three up, three down. We don't even have a third down for that series against the Mets. And we were reaching to grab two downs in that one because Kikuchi wasn't even bad.
It wasn't even bad.
And who gives a shit if they gassed the bullpen, they swept the Mets. Ooh. So
we could also say the another down is, have you heard about that flu that's been apparently following the team all year?
Well, yeah. Okay. This has been a lingering storyline now for like 6 weeks. Usually in professional sports, we'll hear like, oh, there's a flu bug working its way through the team. And like a week later, you're like, okay, everyone's got it and we're good. But guys like can't shake it.
Yeah, that's Mitch Bannon from Sports Illustrated did a talk about it. And we had been hearing about this earlier, like it was affecting them during that really rough time when they were losing to the Yankees in Baltimore and they were at home. And apparently they're saying it's a non-COVID illness, but the way that it's described, it definitely kind of sounds like COVID because it's affecting everyone very differently. It's like, oh, one guy's got a sore throat. One guy's coughing. One guy's really tired. One guy's got diarrhea. And it's just all over the place, which is pretty much what this is now. So yeah, this is it's a weird thing. It's it feels like the Jays really haven't been at 100% this year, even though they haven't really had any injuries to speak of, like, you know, the rotation's rolling along. They haven't had a major pitching injury. They haven't had a major injury to a big guy in the lineup, like a Bo or a Vlad or a Chapman, or, you know, George Springer has been in the lineup the entire year. So there's been like smaller things lingering, but it's weird to see this. Like, you know, we're hockey people, so we see this all the time in, you know, November, January. Everybody on the Oilers catches the flu when it's minus 40 here. It's kind of just the way it is. Yeah. But for everybody on the Jays to be dealing with an illness at the same time as the weather is starting to get nice, it's strange. It's weird. And I think that's just kind of the world we live in now, where everyone kind of feels a little bit more sick more often. And I mean, what can you really say? But it's odd that it's affecting them. I'd be interested to see if other fans or other media for other teams are noticing this with their teams as well. Like, have you seen any talk from any other team? Like, oh, so-and-so is dealing. We've had this flu that's been fucking up our locker room for a month. Like, have you seen that anywhere else ever?
No, and maybe it's just because, you know, we're not like, if this happened to the Royals, I don't think I would ever hear about it. So like, maybe it has happened to like other teams and it's like a thing. But I mean, I've never in the teams I follow closely seen it linger for this long. So that is interesting. It's not like you said, though. I mean, if it's non-COVID illness, whatever, these guys spend a lot of time traveling around to different cities. Like, the chances of them getting sick versus us, who, like, I go from my home to the office and like that's more or less the extent of my life. I probably have less of a chance of getting sick than guys who go from New York to Baltimore to here, there, whatever, right?
And in busy cities too, right? Like, yeah. Toronto's a busy ass city when you're walking around downtown. Like, I mean, I lived there for a few years, and I'll say, like, I got little weird colds and flu viruses and stuff a lot more in Toronto than now that I'm here. And just like you, I'm mostly at home and into the office or in the car.
See like eight people on an average day. Yeah. All right. Let's step aside for a quick break. And when we get back, we will be talking about the big four-gamer coming up against the Houston Astros.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is also usually the point in the show when we get to the AL East report, but our producer Brandon Douglas is off today. We do two shows a week and the guy's off today. Can you believe that?
Wow.
Anyways, some intern. All jokes. Let's talk about some stuff from around the majors, though. You pulled up an interesting stat. We were texting about this on the weekend because we're friends and we text a lot about baseball related things. But you found an interesting nugget on Twitter about guys who pitched a lot last year struggling this year.
Yeah, I'm just pulling up the tweet now. It was from Nay Nay Takes on Twitter, who I think has a picture of Extentacion wearing a Blue Jays hat.
Very weird.
As his profile picture. Yeah, very interesting. So he's pulled up the innings pitched leaders from last year, and it's, you know, a lot of big names. Sandy Alcantara wins the National League Cy Young, Aaron Nola, Corbin Burns, Framber Valdez, Garrett Cole, Shane Bieber, Alec Manoa, Martin Perez had a fantastic season in Texas. And then you look at their, so those are the top guys for innings pitched last season all across Major League Baseball. And pretty much every single one of these guys, save for Framber Valdez, who has a 2.87 ERA, is struggling in some capacity. Like Sandy Alcantara now is at 3.89 ERA, Nola 440, Martin Perez 501, even Garrett Cole's kind of at 3.65, Corbin Burns 4.59. And then, of course, we have Manoa, who's unfortunately the worst of the bunch here at 6.27. I had, I think when we had our Manoa conversation, or one of the thousand Manoa conversations we've already had this year, I had wondered maybe he pitched too much too fast. You know, he came up in 2021 with not a hell of a lot of innings under his belt because he was one of those guys with the unfortunate timing with the pandemic season wiping minor league baseball. He pretty much just didn't have a year that year. And then he, you know, pitches like a few starts in Buffalo and comes up. And then last year he's pitching so much in September. We all remember that amazing September he had where the ERA was below one. He was going like 7-8 innings every single time. And then the playoffs start as well. You have to wonder, like, mixing all of that pitching at a young age, it's a big load to take on very fast. And then this year you're adjusting to the pitch clock. So like there's probably already fatigue carry over from last year. And now you're having to pitch in a different way that requires probably more stamina, maybe more quickness. I don't really know how to describe that, but kind of get what I'm saying.
Which almost would lend itself to the conversation we've been having of like, why don't you just give this guy 10 days off? Why don't you just put him on the IL? Be like, we're going to skip him two starts, two trips through the rotation here. I know they don't have anyone to bring up to try to, you know, make that or fill in that gap. Drew Hutchinson's opted out of his minor league deal. Like you don't have, there's no pitching depth in this organization, which is probably a bit of an indictment on the front office and a bit of a problem that we aren't discussing. But especially when you look around the American League East and it feels like every other team has a ton of pitching depth except for you. But maybe he's just gassed. Like, that is it. He's tired. He pitched way too much last year. And maybe we didn't talk enough about the fact that they let a 24-year-old throw nearly 200 innings. Like, we see a lot of teams throw innings limits on these guys and they don't do it for no reason.
And the Jays have done it in the past, too. Remember 2016 when Aaron Sanchez came out. That was a whole thing. It was September rolled around and they were having to option him down to the minors so that they could skip a start and Francisco Liriano would jump in. And they were like, okay, if we want a deep playoff run, we need to make sure that Aaron Sanchez isn't throwing 1,000 innings in mid, late August, early September. So that's not something that happened last year with the Jays. And you have to wonder, maybe it's coming around to bite them a little bit. I really don't believe that Alek Manoah has just fallen off a cliff. I have a hard time imagining somebody with that level of skill, that level of competitiveness. You know, there's reasons he did as well as he did those first 2 years. It really wasn't a fluke. That doesn't really happen. You know, a guy doesn't put together two seasons like that immediately, just for no reason. So maybe this is just going to be like Jose Barrios last year, and it's going to be a dog shit year for Manoah, and they have to slam the reset button and do something a little bit differently. But I don't think we're anywhere close to writing him off big picture, but I wonder about those innings last year and whether it was just too much too fast.
Next one I want to hit on, we just watched them play the New York Mets, which is a good time to revisit a fun topic that we would chew on a couple of years ago. Francisco Lindor, when he was with Cleveland, there were a lot of Jays fans who were like, you go out and you get this guy and you pay him whatever. He went 1-for-12 in the series against the Jays. He's now batting .213 on the season. There were people, Coombsy, who were like, you're an idiot if you wouldn't trade Bo Bichette for Lindor, because Lindor was what we thought Bichette's peak would be, right? It's like, why would you hold on to Bichette when you could go get the ready-made version of him that's already at an MVP caliber right now? Boy, is it good that they didn't make that trade.
Yeah, because you add up the contract too, and money's no object for the New York Mets and Steve Cohen, and that's great for them, but he's being paid $34 million this year, and he's being paid $34 million through 2031. And it looks like the decline has been fairly steep. I mean, since joining the Mets, his OPS is just 751. And when he was with Cleveland, it was 833. Like, we remember Francisco Lindor, think back to the American League Championship Series in 2016, just how good he was at such a young age. And I mean, he's still good defensively, but it just doesn't look like the same player at the plate at all. No. I remember, throwing it back to that series in 2016, it looked like no pitch could get by him. He could muscle, like a small, slender guy, he could just muscle anything into the outfield, and you couldn't burn a fastball past him. He wouldn't, swing at garbage. And now he just looks like some replacement level middle infielder taking, you know, Santiago Espinal quality at bats. It's been stunning to see. And I mean, the Mets paid a decent price to trade for him and then sign him to the huge contract. And I remember it was pretty much it when Cleveland was going to make that trade. The rumor was it was either the Jays or the Mets. And that's pretty much what it was for everyone at that time. I mean, even remember when it was George Springer, there was a whole bunch of talk, Jays or Mets. It's going to be one of those teams. There were the two teams that were spending all that money in the offseason. And, you know, it would have been an astronomical price to trade for Lindor. It could have potentially involved trading Bo Bichette plus something else to get Lindor. And it's a good thing that didn't happen. There was a lot of Jays fans who were really willing to pull the trigger. I can vividly remember people making the reference. It's either the mystery box or the boat. Lindor is the boat, whereas Bo is the mystery box. And I don't think that's the case anymore. You definitely much prefer having Bo Bichette, even with his occasional defensive deficiencies. The bat is just so much better.
Francisco Lindor also has his defensive deficiencies, which is worth pointing out. Like at this point, like this version of Francisco Lindor, it's not like he's bringing it with the glove and the bat's just lagging behind. It's been a tough run for him as a New York Met. Around the American League East, Coombsy, the Rays 1-2, the Yankees 1-2, the Red Sox slipped up a little bit. The Orioles are 5-5 in their last 10. Maybe they're starting to slowly come back down to earth a bit. So the Jays 8.5 back of the division. They are 2.5 back of the Yankees, 4.5 back of the Baltimore Orioles. And the big story is that they are also 2.5 back of the Houston Astros, who they begin a 4-gamer against this week. Very interesting group of pitchers for the Jays, because you got the three guys you're most confident in. Gausman, Bassett, Barrios will go in games 2, 3, and 4. But this series starts with an Alek Manoah start for the Toronto Blue Jays. And this has to have you a little bit on edge if you're a Blue Jays fan, because that Astros lineup is good. They're playing good ball as of late. They're also 7-3 of their last 10. They just came off winning 3-4 against the Los Angeles Angels. Tonight has me nervous. The rest of the series, considering the way the Jays are playing, I'm actually optimistic.
Yeah, the Jays are playing well. And I mean, the series ultimately does line up nicely. I think you look at the pitchers that Houston are sending out there, and it's not the best of their best. You have Manoa going against Brandon Bylak, a name that, to be completely honest, I haven't heard. I don't follow the Astros tremendously closely, but, and then it's Kevin Gausman versus Hunter Brown, Chris Bassett versus Ronel Blanco, and Jose Berrios versus Framber Valdez. So, I mean, no Kikuchi in this series, which is great, but unfortunately we're at the point now where when Alec Manoa pitches, you're like, ooh, I don't feel fantastic about this. And we already talked about the Sunday game against the Mets, use a lot of relievers. So that might be a tough way to start your series. But at the end of the day, you really got to hope that the Jays carry their good vibes into this series the way they've been playing recently, because just Houston's one of those teams that they might have to jump over in order to make the playoffs. Like, look at the way the American League stacked up right now. It's Tampa's in first. Texas is catching Tampa. They're getting close. Baltimore is up there. Then it's New York, and then it's Houston, then it's Toronto. And of course, remember, one of those playoff spots has to go to whoever wins the Central Division. So you're going to have to jump over what, the Astros or the Yankees or Baltimore, somebody like that to get in. So we've already complained that the Jays don't have as many head-to-head games against the American League East as they have in the past. So it's not going to be as easy to jump a Baltimore or New York or a Tampa. So you have this head-to-head here with a team that's right in there in the wild card mix with you. You really have to capitalize and win three of four here.
Yeah, it could be a really big moment in this team's season. Early June, you're playing great ball right now. The last thing you want is for this momentum to kind of come to a halt in a big series that has the kind of implications in the standings that this one does. You're at home for four, so you're back off that quick little road trip. It's a really, really good chance to kind of say to the rest of the American League, like, hey, we're legit. Like, we belong in this playoff conversation. We are a team that is the threat kind of everyone thought we were back when, well, before the season started, that is. So four against the Astros and then three against the Minnesota Twins. That's the next 7 days of action for the Toronto Blue Jays. You mentioned Brandon Bylak getting the start tonight for Houston. He's got a 3.19 ERA on the season, but he's only made five starts. Also, you mentioned Blanco. He was a guy who they used exclusively out of the bullpen to start the year. And in like late game situations, he's made one start. It came against the Angels. So they've had to move him with a couple of injuries that they have. No Luis Garcia, no Jose Urquidy for them. So they got a couple of guys who started the season in the bullpen that are now making starts for them with some injuries. So it's, at least from a pitching perspective, you're not getting an Astros team that's at 100%. But they're missing. This pisses me off. They're missing two of their better pitchers and they're pulling guys out of their bullpen who are really damn good arms.
Yeah. That's the thing is we can sit here and be like, I can say, I don't know this guy on Houston. It's some guy they've called up from AAA. Well, the guy they've called up from AAA is probably pretty good. It's not like they're throwing Zach Thompson and Casey Lawrence out there in this series. It's not like they're the Blue Jays, man. So these organizations have pitching depth. I mean, circle back to that conversation. Unfortunately, the Jays might need to trade for a starting pitcher at some point, because I'm getting worried that the guys in Buffalo might not be it.
Yeah. What about, we saw, I read the article up on our site, but the Cleveland Guardians put Zach Plesac on, they DFA'd him. Like, if you're is that a guy you'd be interested in picking up?
That's an interesting one, because he was good, right? Like, he broke into the league in 2019, had a 3.81 ERA during the COVID season. He had a 2.28 ERA. I want to say that my memory is a little foggy with the COVID season, but I think that there was a controversy. It was him and Mike Clevenger were out and about when the teams had rules about not doing that. I don't really remember, but I'm pretty sure he got suspended. Correct me if I'm wrong. And then the two seasons after that weren't so great. It was like that controversy happened and then it was not the best. It was ERAs in the fours, 2021 and 2022, but still like not bad. Like last year, his bad season was a 4.31 ERA with a 4.45 FIP, and he still, you know, logged 131 innings. Like I think at this point, even if they can't fix him and make him what he was in his rookie and sophomore year, if he can just come in and log some innings, he's probably an upgrade over, you know, who's the next guy in AAA right now? Thomas Hatch, Mitch White, maybe. I don't know, man. Like, none of the options are good. Like, it's all bad. I think the next best option is a bullpen day led by Trevor Richards. So I don't know. I think it would be worthwhile to take a stab on him, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think so as well. Like, I mean, you'd obviously, there might be other teams in the mix here, but I wouldn't have a problem with giving him a bit of a deal, throwing him down in Buffalo, let him take a couple starts there. And then if, hey, in 10, 12 days, Alek Manoah has a couple more bad starts, then at least you have an option there. That's not just a total gamble. Like, Plesak has some upside to him. I'd be interested in it. We'll see what the Jays do. But the bigger thing is the four games against Houston. So, Coombsy, you enjoy that series, and we will chat again on Thursday once they wrap it up.
Best wishes.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.